This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 26. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Well, welcome to the show, Garris. Welcome to the show, Berners. How is everybody?
Yeah, good. I'm in cloudy Scotland and just about at the airport, just about to go back down south after being on a ICC Europe Level 3 coaching course I've been running with people like Gordon Lord and Keith Tomlins and Kevin Shine and a few others.
So you in touristy Edinburgh or the real Scotland of Glasgow?
Well, it's Edinburgh. So we've been based around the Murrayfield area, and been hosted by Cricket Scotland. Yeah, it's been a good couple of days.
Yeah, it's a lovely part of the world, Edinburgh. I've been there a couple of times, and I enjoy it myself every time I go.
Yeah, good spot.
Yeah, and Berners, what's happening with you?
Oh, much the same as usual, just trying to crush out some PV1 sales and paying close attention to the couple of interesting fixtures going on with Australia and England at the moment. So Watson's crashing the Worcestershire attack to all quarters, and there's cricket aplenty at the moment. There's a tri-series going on as well with India and Sri Lanka and the West Indies, which is quite intriguing.
Yeah, well, I was going to talk about that because there was an interesting article on Crick Info this week about pitches which are a little bit difficult to bat on and how sometimes in those circumstances it's easier to hit boundaries than it is to hit ones and twos. Did you see that one, Garris?
I didn't see it, but I picked up the gist of it, and that can sometimes be the case, can't it? You know, when the ball isn't coming on and we have to put pace on it, the easiest way to do that is to really commit to the shot. And often when we're hitting ones and twos and trying to be clever with the ball, we need the ball coming onto the bat to enable us to get it in the gap. So, yeah, I agree with that, that a higher percentage of boundaries come on wickets that maybe aren't fantastic to bat on. And ones and twos are very difficult, so the boundary becomes incredibly important.
Yeah, the number of dots goes up, but the score, they make up for it by hitting more boundaries. So, you know, that's...
Yeah.
But generally, in a low-scoring game, a boundary has more value, really, doesn't it? Because it's, you know, a higher percentage of each run. So it makes it quite exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, comes back to that commitment, doesn't it? The commitment to defend and to stay in, to give yourself a chance of being able to maximise that ball when it does come along. But the ones that do it well are the ones that really commit into that shot.
Berners, you must know about playing on dodgy tracks.
Hit out or get out, isn't it? You've got to chance your arm sometimes, and if I think as well, if you set the tone and you start to blast a few, it changes the dynamics of the of your opponents, and they almost concede defeat to the batsman and start putting sweepers out and all sorts. So it means that even if it is a bit dodgy, that kind of push or prod suddenly becomes one or two because they're expecting the cavalry charge.
Yeah, that's when it takes clever captaincy, doesn't it? Because you know as a captain that the pitch is making it difficult to knock the ball around, so you want to have fielders in position in the inner ring to try and keep those dots coming, but you also want to make sure that those bigger hits where they hit over the top don't end up as fours and sixes as well. So you have to really work to balance the equation between saving the boundaries and squeezing the batsman.
And that's a real art, isn't it? You know, and that's where in-outfields come into play, and making sure that the people that are in the outs, particularly on wickets, aren't particularly good, are in the right place. And from my experience of playing club cricket on wickets that weren't brilliant, is that deep cow comes into operation, doesn't it? You know, and because we can't hit the ball down the ground because there's no pace on it, and equally third man and fine leg can sometimes be a bit of a low traffic area because you need pace onto the bat to get the ball down there. So the deep extra cover and deep carry become optimal boundary options. If you can cut those off and squeeze with your extra cover, your mid offs, your mid ons, and really put the batter under pressure, then that's the art of captaincy on those pitches.
Those guys in the ring with who are at a level with the non-strikers, Stumps, and having to do a lot of work. They've got a really important role, haven't they?
Well, they're the crucial guys. I always used to talk about the triangle. The triangle being the keeper, who's often on those types of pitches up to the stumps, because there's a lack of pace. And that triangle goes between him and the guy at straight wicket level with the stumps and the guy at extra cover level with the stumps. And the more balls that get fielded by those three, often the more pressure that is applied onto the batter. So we always used to get our best fielders. And if you think back to people like Paul Collingwood, Paul Collingwood was one of the world's greatest straight mid-wickets. And we used to have Strousey over the other side, who was absolutely fantastic. And by squeezing that area with the keeper up to the stumps, it makes it very difficult for the batter side and applies a lot of pressure.
And being really good at hitting the stumps is the other really strong thing that you need to do. We had a game on Sunday, my under-11s. And there were six direct hits, five run-outs.
Mate, that is coach's dreamline.
Well, that's both sides that was, to be fair. It wasn't just me.
Yeah,
but still, that's pretty good for a bunch of 11-year-olds, isn't it?
That's fantastic. Fantastic. Music's my ears, mate.
Oh, yeah. Well, they should have seen the jumping on each other when one of the direct hits came in from the boundary. It was... It was a real moment of joy for them. Speaking of which, it was a cracking win for our boys on Sunday. We scored 226 in our 40 overs, which is a really impressive score. Although nobody got a 50, which 226 all out off the last ball of the innings.
Brilliant. A well-paced innings.
A well-paced innings, exactly. And then... They in reply, it was 126, and they stayed focused all the way through to the end, which is a challenge when you're a younger player and you know you're going to win the game. When it becomes obvious that you're going to win the game easily and you're still 15 overs out from the end of it, it becomes a challenge then, doesn't it, to think to yourself, right, hang on, I've got to keep playing to my best here. I'm not going to lose interest purely because we're definitely... Well, not definitely, but you know, we're absolutely locked on to win this easily.
Yeah.
But the attitude was excellent.
Very, very good, and a great win. So that must be have boosted the confidence of the players.
Yes, we've got another game coming up, so that's going to be interesting to see how we get on with that. A couple in a short period of time, and we're testing the squad out because we've got a big squad. So we're putting a few squad players in. It's weakening the overall strength of the side. But I think at that age, it's more important to try players out and get them as part of the team than to specifically go for these are my 11 or 12 best players and I'm going to stick with them all season.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we've talked about the rate that people develop, and giving people those early opportunities to contribute will be great, because they'll learn so much in that environment. And as they grow, and certain people grow quicker than the others, you'll find that they were really valuable experiences that it can take up into the rest of our cricket.
Yep, it's 40 overs is a long time for them, but they're doing impressively well. So it's good to see that at that level, there's a lot of talent, and there's a lot of young players trying to force their way up to the next level.
Very good.
How are you getting on, Berners? Are you... You managed to get some games in this year?
I'm playing. I'd prefer it to have been raining, though. I'm currently come off the back of two ducks.
Oh, no.
So
what happened?
Yeah, first one being a golden duck. First one in 7 years. My level of cricket, it's very, very, very rare that the guy running into bowl can A, get it anywhere near the stumps, and B, cause you any problems. And he swung one in, it knocked middle stump out the ground, and I was off. And then... on Saturday, in a crunch game against Richmond, I went hell for leather on the fourth delivery and tried to kind of slash cut it through square and got caught second slip, which is also very rare that a second team player can catch anything in the slip corner. So back to the drawing board this Saturday, not playing, going to a wedding.
Time for a rest. Well,
time for a rest.
Well, you'll take good news from our opening bowler, who also bats in the middle order for my Saturday team. He has currently had eight innings, six ducks, a one, and a nine not out, which he hit in three balls.
Interesting. You're sure he's actually a cricketer?
And he's actually quite a decent batsman. But for some reason, he's just completely lost his nerve this year. He keeps getting out for none.
It goes like that sometimes, right? That's sport, that's the game. You just got to find a way to bounce back against it and get your formula back.
On the plus side, he's never been bowling better than he is this season. So, you know, I'm quite happy to take him being a top bowler and not getting any runs. Okay, time now for us to head into the yes-no round. And that's just three questions where Gareth and I can only answer yes or no, no matter how much more we want to say. So, Berners, you have the questions there. Fire away.
First question. Test Championship will be better than the Champions Trophy.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. India will build to a world-beating squad in the next 2 years.
No.
Yes.
Third question. The Australian top order have been saving their runs for so long, they're all due a big score.
No.
Hopefully no.
Okay, time for us to answer your questions. And every week we dip into the mailbag, pick out a couple of questions that have been emailed in to the show. And the best one of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course. Go to see Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Berners, what's the first question you've got this week?
First question comes in from Jitu, and it's regarding coaching. He's saying that the ECB have recently changed the way that coaches get qualified, and he was wondering what difference this makes for someone who wants to get into coaching. He's helping coach youngsters at his local club, but eventually wants to go into coaching older players. So he's asking, what is the best way for a coach who wants to be more all-round in his coaching ability to go about it?
I think probably this is one for you, Gareth, but if I can give some background on it, first of all, in that the pathway now for coaches is that you can either go with younger players. I think it's up to 13, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And then, or you can go with older players and adults, so 13 and up. And you've got two different level twos, if you like. So, you know, which is the entry level for being able to coach on your own. So, Gareth, you've got somebody here who wants to do a bit of everything. What's his pathway?
Well, I mean, it's a brilliant question. And I used to sit on a thing called the National Source Group, which sounds like a big drinking convention. Actually, was a group of people from Scotland, Ireland, Wales and England who would sit down and talk about with the likes of Gordon Lord, who was one of the key members of that actual group, and talk about the way and the direction for coaching. And the changes that you talk about there came from the discussions in that group, because actually we were delivering level ones, level twos, level threes, and they were all geared towards coaching kids effectively. But as Jitu has said here, whilst that's his entry point now, he wants to be able to coach seniors in years to come, and the skill sets and the communication skill sets in particular and the planning skill sets are very different. So we needed to redevelop our courses a bit so people could pick and choose. And the whole idea for Jitu would be, it's great to get involved with the youngsters now, and it's fantastic that you're helping out. And I'm assuming from your question that you have made the entrance in at level one, which is a fantastic start to your coaching, because it gives you the idea of the coaching process and gives you some knowledge in that. And I always a bit reticent of people that just come into the second entry point, which can be level two if they've played quite a lot of cricket. I always encourage people to go for the level one first, so they can really pick up on how we go about coaching, because it, you know, the perception from a player and actually coaches do can be two different things. Just because you're a good player doesn't mean to say you know too much about the process of coaching. So great that he's come in at that level. Then you can start making choices. So I would actually always encourage people to go down the coaching juniors level two first. And then if you have an interest in coaching seniors, then you can go along to the modules that are relevant on the adult level two or the senior player. level two and pick up those various modules. And the whole idea of our coach education program now is that you can pick and choose things off of the shelf which apply to the environments that you're going to work in. So it's a very flexible system. And for Jitu, who wants to start now with the juniors, get really good at that. As and when you want to make the transition, get ahead of the game, go along and pick up some of the modules in coach more senior players, because the communication skills and the planning skills in particular are slightly different and subtly different.
So it's a simple way to start, which is of course that's how the vast majority of people start coaching, isn't it? They start with coaching kids and then build up their skills and experience. And it's still a simple way to start. You start with coaching kids, then you coach kids, and then you gradually, as you go through time and you build up your experience, you can just add to that and develop your learning, and at the same time get more coaching at a higher level.
Yeah, and that's right, and that's why we changed the system, because that, you know, that's the reality, isn't it? People will stay with the age group stuff because that's where they're best suited, or that's where they really enjoy their coaching. And we all know coaches that are fantastic operators at junior level, or fantastic operators at senior level, but they can't necessarily transfer across. So we want to produce a coach education program that enables them to become as good as they can possibly be in their area of specialism, whether it be juniors or seniors. And that's I think, a real step forward in the right direction in the lines of coach education.
And it's great because you can operate at whatever level you like. A lot of these coaches are, or the vast majority again of coaches are working on a voluntary basis. So perhaps you can't afford to put in the time or the money to do a great deal of continuing development, but you can do what you want when you want. And I guess that sort of a la carte style makes more sense when you look at it in that way.
Yeah, I think so, and it'll be interesting to see whether other countries follow suit along that and along those lines. And I know a number of other governing bodies are now looking at the ECB model, as they have done over the years, to be fair, because it is held up as being one of the best coach education products in world sport, let alone just in cricket alone. And it'll be interesting to see how many follow suit with this type of approach, because we've got to make sure that we're putting together courses and structures which actually relate into the normal world, into the coaching world.
Yeah, it can be a criticism, can't it, that that what you learn doesn't necessarily match what you do, and that can be a difficult thing for any governing body to defend if the coaches at the grassroots are saying, well, you know, I'm doing it to get the piece of paper, but actually, it's not relevant to me. You don't want to be in that position, do you? You want to be in the position where the coaches are ready to do what is necessary when they walk out onto the field, whoever there is standing in front of them, whether it's a group of 9-year-olds and you're going to have a game of cricket, or it's a club first 11 side, or even a professional side.
Yeah, exactly right. And we've had a similar thing actually today up in Edinburgh, where a lot of the information that they're getting on their level three is coming from the likes of Andy Flower and Andrew Strauss and Graham Gooch, who are obviously high flyers at work at the test level. But then the real skill in the delivery of it is to ensure that we're also catering to the people that are going to be coaching at under 9 or under 7 age group. And making it relevant to them. So we've had a great deal of fun adapting drills, adapting practices to make it work for both kids that are coming in and having their first introductions into, for example, playing the short ball, practicing the tennis balls and different drills, through to guys that are trying to prepare people to play in World Cups.
The next question is in from Alex, and he's recently come back from Mallet Finger. And he's keeping for the first time for a few months this weekend, and he's asking if you have any tips for taping his fingers. It sounds rather painful.
Yeah, I got a couple of those.
You must have picked up a few of those along the lines, keeping wicket.
Yeah, you got any bendy fingers, Gareth? Mine, a couple of mine are a bit weird looking now.
I got out earlier, I think, keeping wicket to protect my fingers a bit, and I'm looking at them now, and whilst they've always been short and stubby, I think I got away with it. I've got one quite bendy finger, which had a nasty whack about 20 years ago now. But overall, I've probably come out all right. I could tell you that that's down to my ability of catching, but I'd be a liar. I got out of from doing it pretty early in my life.
More about volume than ability, is that what you're
saying? Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Did you ever tape your fingers?
I did, but I did it more as a bit of a fatty, I think, you know, because everybody else was doing it and I just sort of followed suit. So I would say that it's good to tape fingers, but I think there's some other things that are on the market nowadays that can protect the hands from bruises. So, for example, you get artificial fat pads that people use to put into shoes, for example, for blisters or corns.
Yeah.
If you put those inside your inner and tape it into your inner, actually that gives you an extra layer. Rather than making the finger very, very stiff and taped up so it can't move, you're just protecting that particular joint from a bruise or an injury that you've had pre-existing. So there's some things that you can do in building your inners up or your batting gloves up, which really help. But obviously, if you're a fielder, that's not quite so easy. But I have seen people build those fat pads into getting some bandaging, incorporate some of those fat pads into that and having a really thin layer going across one of the more vulnerable parts of the hand. And you can field with that in games and in practice.
I've never really done any taping or anything like that. I experimented every now and again, but always to anything like that felt like it was a restriction, and that my aim was always to make it as less feeling like you're wearing a glove as possible. I mean, you're never going to get it, so it's not that you're feeling that you've got no exactly the same feeling as the hand, but the closer you can get to it feeling natural, then the better. So I've always tried to minimize that, you know, a pair of inners and a pair of gloves with plenty of nice and supple and plenty of flexibility, and I was going to say cross fingers that you don't get hurt, but you don't want to cross fingers, do you? You want to keep the fingers nice and wide.
No, I agree. That was always my thing as well. So I didn't use the tape. I just used to build my inners up slightly with the fat pads, and it worked really well. You can get them from any sort of pharmacy, but I spit mine up from there and then just build them into the inner just to give myself that extra little bit of cushioning.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess it depends on the level that you're playing as well. If the bowlers are all fairly medium paced, then you don't have to worry so much about the cushioning because you know, it's not smashing into your hands at top speed like it is when you get up to a higher level.
Yeah, I often found that the time where I was getting my injuries and get in fingers was often off deflections off the pads down leg side, because obviously I've gone to cover the line of a ball rather than the deflection itself, and that's when you get hit on the finger. And also throw-ins, I always used to find that if I was injuring my fingers, it would mostly come from throw-ins rather than the ball actually coming through to me as well. So you know, they're the areas that I picked up my little bruises or niggles or breaks.
Yeah. Anything that's getting close, you have to keep your fingers close to the ground, and you don't want to get it trapped, the ball trapped in there or anything. That's where you start to feel like it's starting to hurt.
And that's where indoor practice is hard, isn't it? Because we have to practice so much in the Northern Hemisphere indoors, and we often see that people who are doing catching, not just keepers but also fielders, can sometimes get the ball trapped between the hard surface and the floor and their thing, and that can be painful.
Yeah, tricky one to get right. So what we're saying is taping is not necessarily the answer, but I guess if there's a psychological advantage in that, you know, you're coming back from injury and you feel like you want a bit of extra protection, is that to factor in as well, I guess?
Well, I think taping, I mean, you know, I spent enough time around physios to know that taping is actually a bit of a specialist art.
Yeah.
And these guys, they train themselves up for a long time to be able to get that right. So I used to do it because everybody else was doing it. But actually, I didn't want to restrict myself. And when I did get taped by a physio, it was a completely different experience to what I'd actually done myself. So I think it can be, I wouldn't say dangerous, but it's not necessarily going to do any good. The building up of the inners, I think, is a really good idea, because we can actually do that ourselves to protect the areas that we've injured or we're mm-hmm. trying to protect.
And having, I mean, it might seem like an obvious thing to say, but having a decent pair of gloves, you know, a pair of gloves that aren't old and worn out and they've got a crack in one of the one of the finger stops and that kind of thing. You're making sure you've got a decent pair of gloves. It's important as well.
It is, and you know, that's just down to general preparation. And I know some of us wicket keepers can be a bit grubby at times, but but ultimately, you know, the key things, your batting helmet needs to make sure that it's in good nick, because we look after our bats. We need to make sure our batting helmets or our keeping helmets in good nick, and we need to make sure that our gloves are in good nick, both batting and keeping as well. And that's part of every keeper who's serious about what they're doing, their preparation routine.
Yeah, and that's the first thing that I check with my equipment. I can, I'm one of these guys who can just throw equipment around a little bit, but the first thing I check is always the gloves to make sure they're okay and they're going to do a job for me. And if I've got any doubt at all, I'll replace them.
Yeah, completely right. I mean, you've got to look at whatever's going to take the most impact. It's got to be right. You wouldn't find, you know, Lewis Hamilton or Sebastian Vettel taking a chance on the helmet that they use in motor racing. And we shouldn't do the same for the things that are going to take the impact. You know, runners, long distance runners, aren't sort of laissez-faire about their footwear, and quite rightly so. The same as fast bowlers need to be really particular about their footwear, because that's the first thing that comes into contact with impact.
Okay, well, I hope that helped, Alex, and we will return with some more questions next week to be answered. But for now, let's go to the newsroom, and we're going to be catching up with Daisy Cutter with this week's Pitch Vision headlines.
Thank you, David. Hi, I'm Daisy Cutter and this is the Pitch Vision News. Yorkshire's high-tech indoor net facility, the Cricket Asylum, has upgraded its pitch vision technology to include a coaching version of the batting studio. The radar technology will be put to use by the Yorkshire-based cricketers who use the facility. 16-year-old Englishman Martin C has become the youngest batsman to make it into the Pitch Vision 2020 team, first 11. Using stats compiled by his use on the system, Martin has scored his runs at an impressive 94.44 strike rate. He will be batting at number 3 in the 2020 team, unless you can beat him. Former Warwickshire professional Neil Carter has been appointed coach at the famous Bishop School in Cape Town. Neil will take up the post in July, the same time as the official opening of the school's brand new indoor cricket centre. Pitch Vision was installed at the centre in March, and Mr. Carter is enthusiastic about using Pitch Vision as part of the school's development plan. The Graham Gooch Centre, Essex County Cricket Club, has installed Pitch Vision. The ball tracking sensors are built under the surface at the venue and will be open to the public. Bookings will begin shortly. Players in the Essex area, please contact Paul at the centre for details. And finally, rumours of a new Pitch Vision centre opening in the USA are circulating. The new centre has received informal endorsements from the US cricket administrators and could be open as early as September this year. More news on this as it comes to hand. For more details on these stories, check out the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's the Pitch Vision news for this week. I've been Daisy Cutter, and now it's back to the panel.
Thanks very much, Daisy, and that's great news that Essex have started the process. Well, they've had Pitch Vision completely installed and up and running.
That's magnificent. That, I mean, the ideal situation, and I'm glad to see that Essex have gone with that. And crikey, let's put the pressure on Millfield School now. We might have to have a little rethink.
Excellent. And with that in mind, let's head over to the soapbox. It's come to that time again when one of the members of the team gets 60 seconds. It's called the soapbox, and we can't interrupt no matter how much more we want to argue with or against or say more about. It's completely down to that one person to fill those 60 seconds. And this week, it's the turn of Berners, who has no problem filling the time. Berners, over to you.
This week, it's of the bowling discipline, and it relates to players of adequate level, and it's all about no balls. I find it staggering to believe that people that have been playing the game for a long time run in on a Saturday and they find ways to bowl no balls, whether it's front foot no balls, or these days hitting the actual stumps is going to be classified as a no ball, and then above waist is a no ball. Recently played in a number of games where no matter what happens, the bowler just contrived to bowl no balls. And I was just stood there thinking, pondering how hard it can be just to adjust what you're doing, maybe slow things down. Certainly with the front foot, just move yourself back from the popping crease line. Most highly frustrating thing is taking a wicket on a Saturday afternoon and being called a no ball. So the ability to just readjust yourself and just maybe just think about what you're doing and reassess your actions.
It's a very frustrating one. In fact, there's nothing worse really, is there, than a no ball. It's just pointless. And I'll tell you what shows to me that there's something going on. It's all going on in the head. It's not a physical thing. Is that when the free hit was brought into one day international cricket, the number of no balls just dived overnight. I think that says it all, really. Yeah.
And also young players, you know, it's not that hard. You know, bowl considerable numbers of no balls in one game and they blame the pitch and the run-up. Surely it's easy enough just to take off a little bit, you know, before your actual jumping position that's been causing you the problems, and just bring it all back. I mean, what's a yard in terms of an amateur medium pacer or something is barely noticeable.
Nothing. And that is the end of the show for this week. Just before we go, we just need to sort out a couple of little things. The first of which is our two questions this week. We had Jitu's question about coaching structures and what he should do, and Alex's question about taping his fingers. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I really like Jitu's question this week because it's quite topical, bearing in mind where I've been working the last couple of days, but also it's going to be interesting over the next few years to see how many, not just in cricket but in all sports, how many governing bodies take on the idea of the ECB have had in putting modules together that reflect the actual need of the coaching participants.
Congratulations, Jitu, you win a prize, which is, of course, the online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And bonus, if someone is listening right now and wants to send in a question and have their chance to win the prize, what would they need to do?
They can give us a call, and our number for that is 020-88-167-691, or they can drop us an email, and it's coach@pitchvision.com.
You can indeed, and we have a Twitter, it's a PV Cricket Coach, and our Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. You can send us questions in any of those many and varied ways. If you want to listen to the show every week, you can do that as well. You don't have to keep coming back to head to it. Do a search for Pitch Vision Academy and subscribe in that way, or if you prefer to catch your podcast in another way, then head over to pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link and you've got the instructions to the feed in there. That's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Bonus.
Cheers, lads.
Cheers, guys.
Can I just say that I'd nearly just asked Gerard Butler to contribute to a Pitch Vision Academy podcast because he was sitting about a yard away from me
while
I was talking through that.
Yeah. He's more of a football man.
He is more of a football man. I'm not that way inclined, but he's rather good looking. I'll give him that.